Hey, welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. I'm Tate Duryea here with my wonderful friend, Ryan Gibson. What's happening?
Tate, excited to get into today's show with Cliff Averill, who was the Super Bowl champion in 2013 and played for the Seahawks. And he played for the Lions. So we're excited to hear about the what that transition was like going from 2012 Lions, if you don't remember that 0-16 season, to switching teams and then winning a Super Bowl. So we're going to hear about what that was like and what the main difference was in the locker room that really kind of made the culture of the Seahawks what a successful organization. And what's really cool is you have this awesome career like a pilot, right? And at some point you have to retire, right? As like NFL players do. And so what do you do after that career? And I think Cliff has just crushed it in real estate, and he's making the most of it. He's buying up apartment buildings now. He's building luxury houses on the east side of Seattle and Bellevue, Medina, et cetera. And he's taken a lot of what he's learned in the NFL and under Pete Carroll's leadership, and he's kind of made and built his own team of experts in the real estate space.
Yeah. Cliff is just what an amazing guy. He's got amazing energy. He's philanthropic. He's just amazing. And what I loved is that he was investing in real estate while he was playing in the NFL. We as pilots, we have a finite career. We have to retire at 65. Granted, that's a lot further out than NFL players. There's a deadline. And you know, you got to figure out what to do with your money now so that you can continue generating passive income later. If you haven't listened to this show prior, just a quick overview of what we teach on this show. It's Passive Income Pilots, but it's a really holistic show. We talk about tax strategy, asset protection, how to generate passive income. We talk a lot about real estate because Ryan and I are both real estate guys. And we talk about things that are occasionally related to the aviation industry, like aeromedical issues and things like that. Ryan, anything to add to that for anybody that's tuning in for the first time?
No, I would just say that the show has brought together the aviation community and with an investing spin on it. And I think it's been a lot of fun. So with that, we're going to jump in to Cliff's interview.
Enjoy the show. Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you guys for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Super Bowl champ. Ryan, did you watch that game?
Oh, heck yeah, I watched that game. That was the year that I moved to Seattle. So, you know, that was actually, so Cliff, that was officially the year we have something in common, believe it or not. You left the Lions that year and joined the Seahawks, and so did I as a fan. I was a Lions
perfect
fan.
Perfect timing.
Yeah, I mean, I was a Lion. I grew up in Detroit area and was a Lions fan my whole life. And when I moved to Seattle, I mean, it was addictive to get into the 12 country Seattle fan base and just how good the Seahawks were that year.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Now, don't get me wrong. I love my Detroit days. Detroit was a blast as well. But moving to Seattle, the fan base here at that time was unreal. It was kind of, to be honest with you, it was kind of like rock stars. Like the guys, like it was legit like rock stars. The fans were amazing, man. It was cool.
Well, one of the questions I asked you, we met at a meetup, Leica, who was on the show actually about 5 or 6 episodes ago. One of the questions I asked you at that meetup, I thought was just stuck with me so hard was I said, what was the one difference between going from the most losing team in the NFL, I think the Lions were 0-13 or something that year, to winning a Super Bowl championship. And the speed at which you answered that question was like mind-blowing. So what was that answer?
Went from 0-16. Now, I will say that happened 5 years prior to me coming to Seattle. So it was my rookie year going 0-16, first team to ever do it. Not something you want to necessarily be in the record books for. But then 5 years later to be one of the best teams with the Super Bowl trophy, but not just one of the best teams, but probably arguably one of the best defenses ever to be a part of something like that with so many Hall of Famers and different things like that. It was amazing. But for more so than anything, for me and how I live my life based on how those things played out is more so it ain't how it starts, right? Continue, keep working, continue, head down, keep grinding, keep putting one foot behind the other, and things will work itself out. One thing for sure that will happen is if you quit, nothing changes, right? So that's kind of how I live my life. But that's based on really starting 0-16, being winless to becoming a part of something so special and historic.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you mentioned to us at that meetup was culture. Like the culture within the Lions organization was a lot different than the Seahawks when you showed up. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. And that's the first time I actually realized that culture and how coaches coach actually play a role in success. The cultures were completely different, and no knock on the Lions by any means. I think the NFL in general was kind of just ran like that. And Coach Carroll was just different in how he approached it. But with the Lions, it was very militant. You got to have your hat on a certain way. Some coaches want you to tuck your jerseys and stuff in, and you got to have this. It's just very militant-like from that perspective. But then, and it was fear-based too, right? You didn't want to mess up. You was afraid to mess up. When I got to the Lions, it was completely different. Or when I got to the Seahawks, it was completely different in a sense of Coach Carroll was, hey, no, be yourself. Wear whatever you want to wear. But whenever we get between these lines, just know you're at work. But we have music playing. We're shooting hoops before meetings. We had ping pong in the locker room. Like, we had all kinds of different things to just keep it fun, but more so than anything, allowing guys to just be themselves. And I think Coach Carroll realized if guys can be themselves, you'll get the most out of them. And so I would say that was the difference between kind of what I experienced with the Lions going to the Seahawks.
Yeah, that's really key. And now you're a real estate developer here in Bellevue, Washington, which is amazing. I've seen some of the stuff that you built, and it's top of the market stuff. I mean, these are probably $3+ million houses. What did that Pete Carroll cultural difference, the laid back mentality, what did that kind of teach you about maybe what you do today in business?
I think the biggest thing that Coach Carroll taught me with the mindset and how he approached coaching us in culture is being consistent and being dedicated to something, but making sure you enjoy it, right? When I first retired, I was trying to figure out what the next move was. You know what I mean? I've been playing football for 15, 16 years. I was only 33 at the time, so almost half my life. So just trying to figure out what the next move was. So I tried media. I tried having podcasts and all these different things, just trying to, again, figure it all out. But one thing that kept calling me was real estate, and that was the passion part. Like, that's the piece that Coach Carroll was really good at, just, hey, be passionate about what you're doing. And then, again, just being dedicated to something, like being all in, studying. And I don't know if I necessarily learned that from Coach Carroll, but just being a professional athlete in general, in order to have success, to give yourself a chance to have success, like, you got to be all in. I'm talking about film study, talking about taking care of your body, got to kind of stop partying a little bit. You got to, like, there's a lot of different things that you got to kind of do to be a pro, but then to have longevity. So I just applied all those different things to trying to build out my company, building out these developments and different things like that. I try to tap into that stuff.
Was there any other mentors you had that really played a role in learning the real estate side of things? I mean, Coach Carroll was instrumental in the philosophy and team dynamics and leadership, but what about like the technical part of learning real estate after your NFL career?
Man, so as here in Seattle, the East Side, Bellevue, Kirkland, all these different areas, there's a lot of people doing a lot of cool stuff. A lot of wealthy people doing a lot of cool stuff. And I've been fortunate enough to meet a few different individuals that are huge developers, whether you're talking about high risers to mid rise to single family stuff. But in particular, when we talk about single family, my business partner actually is a mentor to me. He's been in the game for 20 years. We've had a great relationship prior to even doing business together. So I'm able to kind of peel back the curtains a little bit and just be able to see kind of what's really going on, whether it's talking about the cost perspective of it or even just being a general contractor. And really, you're like, when I thought of development, this is how ignorant I was, I guess, to it. When I thought of development, when I thought of being a builder, I thought you were actually hammer in hand and nails. No, you're managing people actually that have different, like, yeah. That's just where I was when I first started. But to realize, no, it's all about managing people and being a leader, right? All things that I've learned how to do playing the sport of football as well. So just having a few different mentors in different spaces, whether you talk about, like I said, single family stuff and even some of the distressed multifamily stuff that we purchase. I'm big on learning. I'm big on looking for people to be able to help me as I go on this journey. I truly believe there's no finish line to learning. So
Cliff, I want to jump into the mindset of like investing, right? Because we've all heard the stories of high flying athletes that end up broke at the end of their career. What was the difference? What was the catalyst for you? I was listening to you and another NFL player on Bigger Pockets, and you guys were talking about how you guys would play Rich Dad, Poor Dad during the workouts at 6 a.m. over the speakers.
Yeah,
like that was amazing. Yeah. So you had this culture of what are you investing in? What are you doing? What's working out for you? And I think that high income professionals really high income professionals like you, but also high income professionals like pilots always get, they get linked up with a financial advisor, and it's like stocks, bonds, mutual funds. And the real estate side, nobody teaches you that. You got to go out and find that. So how did you find it? And then how'd you develop that muscle and that idea for creating cash flow and passive investing?
So when I played ball, when I was playing, I was also investing in real estate, whether it be funds and syndications and different things like that. And actually, I want to say my first real estate fund that I got into was via Marshawn Lynch. Just talking about different investments. And I think that was the difference between, say, our locker room and most locker rooms. We were actually willing to talk about what we were doing with our finances, right? It's kind of like when you get around family, most people don't want to talk about money. Nobody wants to talk about religion or politics.
Right.
We were like, nah, we're open book. Let's talk about all of it, right? And I think that's how you learn. And that's what sports has taught me in general, is you got to have the conversation. And that's how you learn from other perspectives. But Marshawn talked, he told me about a fund that he was in. He had partnered with the syndicator. He's done one or two funds with them and it's been going well. So then I started kind of doing my due diligence, in a sense of just, honestly, when you get into it, you don't really know what you're looking at.
Right.
But one thing I do know is numbers, and so, and returns and different things like that. So just kind of diving into it. So I invested in a few funds and those things were going well. But when I retired, now I really have time to actually pay attention to what's going on with my finances, because now I'm not sacking quarterbacks or anything like that. So
right.
I dove deeper into just what these syndications were doing. And again, great returns. But I was like, well, if I did it myself, I could probably make more. You know what I mean? Right. Like, because I also understand the more convenient something is,
right,
the less your returns will be, essentially, of course. Right? Because everyone that's putting the work in has to get compensated before you get your return, right?
Right.
So as I'm understanding and diving deeper into, that's when I'm like, okay, you know what? Let me try doing this on my own as well. And it started off small, but I would say just having the conversations with Marshawn, Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, Red Bryant, like we would literally sit in our player development's office, player development's Mo Kelly's office, and just talk about a wide range of different things that guys are doing, investing, just getting a better understanding. Then, like you said, we started playing Rich Dad, Poor Dad and all these different books to just make sure that guys are in tune, the younger guys are in tune with kind of the conversation that the older guys were having.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I think that just goes to highlight, like, your network is your net worth, right? And obviously,
no doubt.
And then just building a community of sharing that information with each other, I think is just so powerful and awesome. And then I remember you saying that you could do syndications and the returns are going to be lower than if you go out and take a swing at doing it yourself. Because you're doing all the work, you're putting together the deal, and that's why you get paid. And that's why you get your piece of the property, right? And what was that like though? I mean, because active real estate is not cut out for everybody, right? Is there anything that you kind of regret or that you've appreciated more, or have you fallen in love with it? What's your take on that now?
I'm in love with it. I'm passionate about it. And I think the reason why I'm passionate about it, there's multiple reasons why I'm passionate about it. The reason why I'm even in real estate, like I said, based on conversations, but also meeting other individuals here in the city that made their money in other spaces that end up buying and getting into real estate. But I think the biggest thing is, I mean, I'm only 30. Well, at the time I was only 34, 35 years old. I'm 38 now, but being able to create that cash flow, I think you start reading all these different books and you start understanding kind of how money works. I joke with some of my young guys. I'm like, man, I would rather have, and these are random numbers, but I would rather have $100,000 coming in a month from cash flow from real estate than to have, you know, $2 or $3 million just sitting in the bank account. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, well, no, I'll take $2 million. I'm like, nah, the cash flow is where it's at to me, because I know this is coming in. Once you start pulling a dollar or two, a couple hundred thousand here, a couple hundred, now you're at a million. Now you're like, oh, I should have took the $100,000 a month, right? But I just like the process too. I think there's nothing cooler than, especially on developments, like you come up with this concept in your head, you see this lot, come up with a concept, you get with these architects and these engineers, and we say, we're going to build this. And then 18 months later, boom, there it is. It's, whoa, like we really did, like this is real live Legos, right? Like, so I think that's pretty doggone cool to be able to see that. And then also you're providing housing. Like everyone needs a house, right? Now we are building more luxury homes, but everyone needs a house. So I think being able to be a part of that process, being able to see from A to Z kind of everything you thought about and put together actually comes to fruition and you see it, I think it's pretty doggone cool. And then, of course, the returns are awesome as well. Yeah,
totally.
Okay, there's a lot that goes on between having that vision and 18 months later when the product gets delivered, right? What's the biggest kick in the shins that you've ever gotten? What's the biggest setback you've had?
I mean, you're gonna get a few kicks in the shins for sure through the process. I mean, even like on the project we have right now, we have a project going on in Medina, and we felt like we were very conservative on a lot of different things. But there was the architect and some of the engineers didn't catch this, but there were some issues with elevation, and it was. So with the issues with the elevation, now the plumbing and some of the sewer stuff was off a little bit. So now we had to come in with bigger, some different things that had to come in, and it ended up costing us like an extra $100K. That's something we did not budget for, that we did not see. But the good thing is, again, because we're so conservative in our numbers, we're able to kind of pull from different spaces. But these are things, that's one thing that's consistent with real estate is there's going to be something that comes up that you did not realize or didn't understand. And you just have to make sure you have contingencies for that to be able to weather the storm. But it's like a football game. And that's why I love it, too, is because there's so many similarities with football. It's like a football game. Like, football games do not go the way you expect them to go every single time. I've been down 21 points in the fourth quarter, and somehow we found a way to win, right?
That was a good game, by the way.
Great game. You just got to keep moving forward. You got to keep moving forward as long as it doesn't hurt you. And honestly, if you don't lose any money and you take it, you learn from it. That was just an expense. It was a great lesson.
Yeah, I love that right there, which is, I think sometimes you're not going to win every game, but sometimes the games that you lose are the biggest winners, right? Because you take away a lot from the game. Oh, that's true. And as long as you apply those lessons learned to your next project. But that is real estate. I mean, it's like playing a bunch of games, right? And you win some, you lose some, and you get better by losing, and you get better by having a good culture and having a good product and listening to the numbers and paying attention to how you get better. And that's really what it's all about.
No doubt.
What does, in your world of real estate investing now, what is winning the Super Bowl to you? Like, what is your absolute best scenario that you can, what are you striving for today?
So I'm going to give you the business model that I have, and then I'm going to tell you why and then how we get to the Super Bowl. So the business model is we build these luxury homes, we flip those, and then I go buy distressed multifamily properties with the proceeds from that. We buy 2,200 units, all in the Midwest or in the Southeast region. And we, again, my big thing is cash flow. So we do that, we flip those. Now, the main reason why I started CA Family Properties is because I wanted to be able to help my friends and family create generational wealth through real estate by being able to create cash flow for them, right? But I wanted to build the platform for them because, one, it's hard for people to invest with other people that they don't know or trust, especially if you don't come from a background of investing in general. So I want to create this platform for my family and friends because, one, they know I don't need their money. And two, they know my heart. They know like who I am and what I want to do. So the Super Bowl for me is 10, 15 years from now, especially my friends that are around my age, is to be able to, hey guys, man, what are y'all doing this weekend? Oh, nothing. Man, let's go to the Bahamas. Oh, let's do it. I don't have to put the bill. Everybody can afford it themselves. Right? That's the win for me. That is the win for me, right? Nice. So that's my ultimate goal, is to be able to help friends and family. I would like all my closest friends and family to be able to have enough income coming in to be able to move around when they want to. I think that would be awesome for me at the age of 50 to be able to do that with all my friends.
That's amazing.
That's great, man.
And when you say your friends and family are involved in real estate investing, are you just educating them? Are they investing with you? How do you keep them along for the ride or get them involved in everything?
Both.
Okay.
I think education is a big part of it because as I learn, and that's what all my platforms are like, my TikTok is all really about just my journey. As I'm not telling you I know exactly what I'm doing, but I'm in the game. I'm figuring it out, right? So as I go on this journey, I want to teach you as well because information isn't really out there like that. And unless you're, now I'm a podcast junkie. I listen to real estate, everything. I don't even know what the hottest music out is right now. I know I hear there's a beef between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. That's all I know right now. Right? But I don't even know what the songs are. But I don't even know where I was going with that. Oh, yeah. So I just think that if I'm able to do that, or I want to educate them, and then also they are investing with me. Now, I say that they've only invested in one project in particular. But my mom is like, I'm ready for the next project. Like these checks every quarter has been great. Like I've never had money come in that I didn't have to work for. You know what I mean? So she's everybody's anticipating the next project. But yes, I try to let them invest alongside of me on some of my projects, but also education is huge for me. I want to teach them. I want to teach them.
Yeah, well. I love that because there are, when I got into real estate, people ask me, I've gone and spoken at my alma mater, my college, about the business school. And I'll never forget some of the questions the students had, which is like, what did you do to get the experience you have today? And I'm like, I listened to like over 1,000 podcasts and I've read countless dozens, if not hundreds of books and all those things you can do from anywhere. Yeah. And it's just incredible that, and I think as a society, we want to share information. And all that information is out there for you to take. And that's free, most of it.
Free or $20 for a book. Yeah. It's so cheap to get that education, but it's a lot of work.
It is. But I think with most people, and I hate doing generalizations, but I think with most people, I think you don't know what you don't know. And tapping into it is okay. Well, yeah, I have this internet, but if I don't know what to Google, you know what I mean? So I think that plays a role. But also, I just think you got to be like, you also have to just be passionate. You got to find something you're passionate about and then dive all in, right? Because Google is a great source, right? YouTube University, as they would say, is a great source to be able to figure things out. And I know for me with the real estate piece is it is reading a lot of books. It is meeting a lot of people and it is podcasts, like podcast overload every morning, 3 hours of some sort of podcast.
Top five podcasts or books you recommend if somebody wants to get into real estate?
Ooh, okay. Of course, you got to start off with podcasts or books. So that's good. Of course, you got to start off with Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think that's just a fundamental book, mentality, right?
Absolutely.
It's the world famous book.
It's the gateway drug.
Exactly. I like that. Right. All the bigger pockets, the platform in itself, there's a gazillion podcasts on there, right?
Yep.
Think and Grow Rich. I think that's another great book.
Other than like Passive Income Pilots, of course.
You know. Passive Income Pilots, of course. Passive Income Pilots. You got to have that on there. I mean, the list is on. I mean, I listened to Rod Cleave's Lifetime Cash Flow. There's Financial Freedom, Real Estate Investment. There's so many out there. And then book-wise, but those are my favorite two books that I try to listen to at least once a year.
Yeah. I think that's so important. I mean, the time that you can spend in your car on a layover for pilots, that's where I picked up a lot of my knowledge is like on the layover while you're going for a run or wandering around a city.
That while you're flying?
Yeah, by yourself. Yeah, but in the back of the plane, whatever it might be. Right? You can always be Bluetooth in and jam into some new education. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, instead of putting a movie on while you're deadheading.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. John Wick 4. There can only be so many John Wicks out there, right? So,
exactly.
In 2016, you vowed to build a home for each sack. You got 11.5 sacks that season. Can you tell us about that? This is a bit of philanthropy that you've been involved in.
Yes. So that year, Haiti had just had a crazy hurricane, I believe, that came through. So I'm very passionate about Haiti as a country. Both of my parents are Haitian. Used to go there every summer, visit my grandma when I was a kid. That's actually the only traveling I ever did growing up. But they had a hurricane that came through and it was devastating. It took out quite a few homes and different things like that. So I wanted to find a way to get involved. And I also wanted to make it fun and get some other people to get involved with it. So fortunate enough, I bought out. We got 11 and a half sacks, so that equals 12, the irony in that, right? So we ended up building 12. Well, I had 12 homes that I was going to build, but then I had some other people in the community that partnered up with me as well and matched that. So we actually ended up building 25 homes that year for quite a few individuals back in Haiti. And it was amazing because we actually went back to see a majority of those homes and just seeing, I mean, we take so many things for granted here in the country, country. Totally. We look at so many different things that separates us and all this other stuff, but we don't realize how blessed and fortunate we really are to even have this type of communication, have electricity and all these different things where there's people around the world that don't have that on a daily, right? So perspective is everything, but being able to go back to Haiti, being able to give back, being able to go back with my mom, I think is probably one of the more rewarding things that I've been able to do thus far in my life because she was one of those people. She was one of those folks that lived in one of those small houses with 7-8 people in it, a 2-bedroom place, no infrastructure for sewage and nothing like that. So her being able to go back and being able to be a part of giving back to her country, being able to build homes, build schools, support so many different things. I mean, every time she went back, she just tears. So just being able to be a part of something like that, I think it was really cool. But again, being able to have the city of Seattle get behind me to also build some homes as well, I think is, it speaks volumes to the city and the 12s.
That's amazing.
And you ended up building a school.
Yes, we have a school in Haiti as well that we were, and again, this is conversations. Marshawn Lynch is the person that connected the dots there. Because he was doing some stuff in Africa and he's, hey, this group that I'm with, they also build in Haiti. I'm like, really? Okay, let's dive into it. And building the school, which was so cool too, is Marshawn donated, Richard Sherman donated, Coach Carroll, all those guys donated and built a building or a classroom, should I say, at my school as well. So
wow.
It just speaks volumes to the guys. Yeah, no, I mean.
And Marshawn sounds like a hell of a good guy on and off the field. Yeah.
By far, one of my best teammates that I've ever had, but it's been two guys that I've played with that the perception and who they really are night and day.
Yeah.
And Marshawn Lynch, one of them, super amazing guy. I'm just an amazing teammate, still my guy to this day. And then Ndamukong Suh, another guy that his perception and who he is are completely different as far as for just getting to know him on a personal level.
Yeah, he played at the Lions, yeah, for a few seasons.
Yeah. He's with the Lions, and he won a Marine with LA as well in the last few years. So
that's awesome. So can I just dive into that a little bit more? Like, how did that actually work, nuts and bolts? You decided you want to build these houses in Haiti. How did you... did you fly down there? Did you find builders down there to actually make it happen? Did you design them? How'd that work?
No, that's a great question. So, of course, because we don't live there, it's very difficult. So it's partnerships, it's teamwork, right? Just like anything else. No one can do anything in real estate or any other business by themselves, right?
Absolutely.
So we partnered up with the organization, did our due diligence, did a lot of vetting. It took a while, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of people say they're doing things that they aren't really doing.
Yep.
And so we partnered up with this organization called We at the time. And they doing some research, going to visit the lot that they were looking to build it, because there was actually a school there already that housed 500 kids. And you got to see, it was like the classrooms were split by blankets, essentially, for 500 kids. So doing the research on the organization, one thing that I was very adamant about was making sure that it was all Haitian workers and Haitian companies that were building these so it can stimulate the economy as well. And once we gave them the go ahead, we were visiting every 3 to 4 months, whether it was me or my team. A few times Marshawn went without me with my team to go out there and check on it, because he was retired actually that same year and then came back, of course. But he was retired that same year, so he would travel and go check on the school as well before it was completed. And then when it was completed, we all went back, did a big little party at the school for all the students and all that good stuff. It was a good time. It's very impactful, and it probably means so much more to me being able to do it, because again, just knowing where my mom comes from, knowing where my dad comes from, and then again, being able to go back and build an infrastructure for people to be able to learn, because I think education is the way to get out of some of the things that they have going on in that country. So that's my way of being able to hopefully get back in, hopefully putting them on the right trajectory.
So incredible. And that's what I love about money unlocks so many wonderful things in the world, right? And it's not a zero-sum game. Just because someone's making money in a real estate deal doesn't mean it's taking any money out of your pocket. It's interesting today. There's just such an attitude against building wealth, like wealthy. There's this class warfare, and there's so much philanthropy in the world because of economic drive. Wow. And it's just so wonderful. So well done.
So to talk about that a little bit, I don't necessarily understand it, but what I will say is, like, coming from where my people come from and being able to have opportunities to be able to create wealth, right? Being able to make money, not even just create wealth, just being able to make money is a blessing in itself, right? Because that's the only reason my parents are here or came to the United States, was for the opportunity to be able to work.
Right.
Didn't matter what jobs, didn't matter where, just wanted to be able to provide for their family, right? That's the ultimate goal for everyone, I feel like it should be, to be able to provide for their family. Now, how far you want to take it and how, that's on you at that point, right? Like, we're all on this race by ourselves in a sense, but if I'm going to do something, I want to be the best at it. You know what I'm saying? So why? And in being the best at something, you get compensated for it. You know what I mean? So to me, it's all about building, making as much money as you can so you can give back as well. I'm big on serving. I think we are all here to serve one another. But in order to serve, you have to have resources. And that's where I think money comes into play.
Yeah. Absolutely. And wealthy individuals that I talk to, always the theme is always, it's fun making money, but it's all about giving it away. And yeah, it's more enjoyable when you hit that stage of life where you can do that, or that stage in your wealth to do that. And you are a shining example of giving back and really making a difference in the community. That's really great. Getting back to the money-making side, how do you identify your properties? What's a right down the fairway project for you, like over in Bellevue for building the new houses?
So for building a new house, we only look for lots that are in Medina, Bellevue, Kirkland, and Clyde Hill. So we like the luxury market. And one of the reasons why we like the luxury market is because this area in general is a bubble in comparison to most other cities and states when it comes down to the type of folks that are going to be able to afford these homes. But also, you got to remember, it's supply and demand too, right? We're stuck between water and a mountain. And you got to do what you got. The closer you are to the water, the more it's going to be, right? So that's a big role. And then being able to maximize square footage on the lot is important too, but also making sure that it's actually a functional home in a sense of someone that has kids, they can go out in their backyard and play it, or they have a front yard. Like, I'm big on that because my first home that I bought here in Bellevue actually didn't have that big of a backyard. And we had to move because of that, because my kids couldn't go outside. So now I'm thoughtful in that way in how I try to build, how my team, should I say, tries to build. And then it's also just understanding the market, understanding how much it's going to cost you to borrow money, understanding how much it's going to cost to build. Fortunately, my business partner, again, is a general contractor, and he's been doing it forever and a day. So he can put the numbers together fairly quick, and we can go after deals a little quicker if we wanted to. And being partner with a business, having a partnership with a contractor, there's also no change order fees, right? There's a lot of fees and different things that you're able to bypass because y'all are business partners and y'all want to maximize on the profits. So being able to do that, I think, is a great structure for him and I and his wife and my wife, of course. And it's been working. But this area in itself is unique in comparison to, say, other places. I don't know if I'd be able to do what we're doing here and replicate that in other cities to be able to get the same types of profits.
Yeah, the market here is, I mean, the number of businesses that are headquartered in and around the Puget Sound is intense. I mean, Costco, Starbucks, Microsoft, Amazon. Yeah, I mean, just the number of employers here and the wealth in the area is really insurmountable. How did you go about building your team? I mean, because it sounds like you very quickly, I mean, you're obviously had a really great career in the NFL and then transitioned to in having good mentors among your team, learning. And then, okay, I'm going to settle on these markets and I'm going to build a team here. Like, how did you go about doing that? What characteristics do you think are required to do something like that for someone to looking to get into active real estate?
I'm big on referrals with different people that I know, that I trust, that I've possibly done business with, but I just know who they are and their character. So most of my team has either come from people that I've known for a long time, that have been in that space. I just wasn't ready to partner with them, you know, earlier on, but I got to see kind of what they were doing. And I know that they're good people from that perspective. And then a lot of my other partnerships and different things like that, again, it comes from referrals. It comes from different people that, you know, the guys that are doing high risers, hey, I'm looking to get in this space, but I want to do something smaller. Oh, let me refer you to this guy that does more infill stuff, right? More smaller 60 unit type stuff or whatever it may be. So I'm big on networking. I used, to be honest with you, I used to hate it with a passion when I played. Yeah, because it was just one of those like, oh, I got to go to this thing again. Now I got to sign an autograph. That sounds real. sounds crazy.
It's like Marshawn, right? What did Marshawn say? I'm here because I'm required to be here or something like that.
Yeah, I'm here so I don't get fined. Yeah. But what I realized was like that whole notion of what we used to hear growing up is it's not what you know, it's who you know, is so true in the business world. You know what I mean? Like just your network of people, what they're doing, and hey, man, do you have somebody that can do whatever? Oh yeah, let me refer you to that. It's the same concept with building up my team, is asking questions, being okay, being vulnerable and saying, I don't know how to do this, and getting with people that are in that space and they refer you to other people and you build relationships. And you go from there. But it's been all referral or people that I've just known for a while.
Yeah.
I've replaced networking with the word networking with making friends. And it helps.
It does. It does. And I tell guys this all the time, too, when I go talk to some of the guys in the locker room. Like, hey, you should be networking, but make it genuine. Don't just, hey, give me your number. Hey, what are you doing? How much money are you making? No, make it genuine. Like, get to know people. Get to know people, and then things will come from that. But you can't just come in. Hey, man, let's do this deal together. No. Get to know these folks first.
Yep.
Yeah, Tate and I kind of preach that on the podcast. There's so many conferences, meetups, podcasts, books, people to meet. That was one thing that I did early on was I listened to, you know, thousands of these podcasts, and then I got to know who the hosts were and then went to their conferences or whatever and met with them and ended up speaking at their events or whatever. And that's how Tate and I got connected and have done deals together and do this podcast together. It's huge. Mm-hmm. And just to sit behind a computer and just analyze deals all day, you're not going to move the needle. And you got to get out there. So that's really great.
It's teamwork. You're just building out a team of people and getting with people that have different skill sets. It's, again, football. You only need one quarterback out there, but you need five O-linemen to block for him. You need a running back. You need a fullback. You need a tight end. Like, you need all these different pieces in order for that guy to have success. Like, you need – so it's all about building your team out, but people with different skill sets to be able to get you in the right position to be able to have success is huge.
I'm taking it to OT. I got one more because I want to leave people with something that they can get amped up on. So, Cliff – you're a Super Bowl champion. Can you tell us, give the listeners, how do you play like a champion every day? You come to this podcast with a ton of energy. Like, I'm more energized just being around you. How do you play like a champion? How do you go out on that field, give it your all? What would you recommend people bring into their everyday life to give it their all, play like a champion in their everyday life?
So it's funny you say that. So I would say, first and foremost, I have this little notebook. It says gratitude on it. I write in it every morning before I start work. And I think that's the first step, is just understanding. And I don't care where you're at, what position, like, understanding that, hey, people ask me, hey, how are you doing? I'm like, hey, I woke up this morning. I can battle the rest, right? And that's a real statement to me, because you don't control waking up in the morning. Like, you just wake up. You know what I'm saying? So like, being thankful for the day. And then moving through it that way, I think, helps me out tremendously. Just having gratitude. And then number two is, like, my goals and my aspiration are bigger than whatever headache or hiccup I have going on in the moment. So I won't allow the small, tedious things, or I try not to. I'm a human being. I try not to allow the small, tedious things, whether it's the wife yelling about whatever, we're over budget over here, or what I do know is I'm in the game, and if I continue to keep putting the best foot forward, I will have success. And being patient with that, because I do think we live in a society now where you look at Instagram, you look at all these social media outlets, and we just see the finished product. We just see the guys on Sunday, but we don't realize the work that these guys have been putting in since January to be able to perform in August or in September, October, November, right? I understand that process, and I apply myself that way every day. As you guys know, in real estate, you might go 8-9 months, a year, 14, 15 months without getting paid, right? Are you going to be patient enough to continue to keep moving forward in that space? And I guarantee you, if you do, there's either a learning lesson and some money on the back end of that, but you have to continue to keep moving forward. I said a lot right there, but I would say it again, is gratitude, and then just get in the game and continue to keep moving forward no matter what the hiccups are. It's a roller coaster ride, but you will get to the finish.
I love it. Good. All right.
Favorite game outside of the Super Bowl. Man, I've had quite a few with my guys, man. That NFC Championship game against San Francisco before the Super Bowl was pretty fun.
Yeah,
that was a good game. I learned a lot about myself and how I apply myself now with the second NFC Championship game against Green Bay when we were down, I don't know, 16 points or something like that, with 6 minutes left and still found a way to win. Like, that game in particular is, again, how I choose to approach things when it comes down to real estate, but really life. It doesn't matter how it's going right now. If I put the work in, the results will be what I want them to be at some point. I just got to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Well, who are the most important people on your team in the business world now?
Most important people on my team, I would say first and foremost is my executive assistant. She's awesome. Y'all probably were actually communicating with her on kind of getting this all scheduled or whatever. But she's awesome in a sense of, like, what I found myself doing early on was I was too much in the weeds of doing the small, tedious stuff, email, schedules, all these different meetings and whatever else, and putting her in place and basically buying my time back to be able to go network more, right? Being able to go out and do the things that will move the needle, building out my team from that perspective. So I would definitely give her the number one piece, my MVP. I joke where I'm like, hey, you're the MVP player. Like, I need you to play like such, right? It would be her. And then my asset managers. I have a couple of asset managers that I've brought on a couple of deals. They deal with the day-to-day stuff with the property managers, and I deal with them. So just building out an infrastructure. But yeah, I would say those are probably my 1-2 punches right there as far as for those that I think are extremely important. And then, of course, my business partners, whether it be the general contractor or not, those guys are extremely important as well. But first place is for sure my girl, Keisha. She's an MVP for CA Family Properties.
That's incredible.
Sure. Well, Cliff, first of all, thank you. Thank you for coming on to the show. One of the last questions that we have for you today, and I really appreciate your time. This has been a lot of fun. Wow. Your most rewarding achievement in post-NFL, what has been the most rewarding achievement?
Man, that's a great one. I think the most rewarding achievement that I've had outside, I mean, I guess it's not an achievement. Being a great dad is not an achievement. That's just what you should be doing. I would say from a business perspective is what kind of the story I said earlier is like my mom being more involved in wanting to learn more about business. My mom is 63, she's going to be 65 this year. And like her just being so excited about her quarterly checks, her quarterly distributions is so cool to me because I'm really teaching my mom like the game that she never knew existed, never understood. I never really had the time to try to pick it up or anything like that, but really setting her up for retirement. She wants to retire in the next 4 to 5 years, and she's adamant about being able to, like, she knows I'm going to look out for her, of course, and I'm probably going to take on the bulk, but she's very adamant about making sure that she brings something to the table too when she retires, and that's investing. And she was just telling me the other day, so I can't believe I've even had that much money to invest. Like I never even saved that much money, but now that I'm so locked in on being able to invest with you, like I'm realizing I'm able to put this money away and I'm getting these distributions and I'm not spending that money because I want to reinvest it again. Like, you're learning something, Mom. I like that. That's amazing. So that's very rewarding to me.
That's hugely rewarding. Yeah, that's the best thing ever. I mean, that, I don't know. I know you're proud, but that's amazing.
I love it. Yeah, she's super excited. She's asking questions. She's learning. And she has a game plan and she wants to execute it. So it's cool to see.
That's awesome.
That's great.
I love that. Well,
Cliff, we really appreciate your time. This has been an absolute joy having you on. And for those listening, remember, we got a growing Facebook community of aviators and investors. So look us up, Passive Income Pilots, or you can, any questions that you have that you want us to answer on the show, you can always go to ask@passiveincomepilots.com. That's our email address, ask@passiveincomepilots.com. We value your input and look forward to exploring more and inspiring more people and stories together. So with that, we'll catch you on the next episode.